I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking about conquering the marathon mind games in the presence of Dr. Martin Turner, an expert on running psychology.
Oh, this unpicks a lot of very useful brain science.
It does.
And thinking processes and procedures in terms of setting yourself up for glory and, unfortunately, some hardship.
Oh, but we look at both ends of the spectrum.
Important learning hardship. Mm. A great conversation with Dr. Martin Turner, who mentions ancient Stoicism.
Yes, there's some Latin later on, isn't there?
But what? And this triggered, happily a wonderful segue into Ali Ball, roving reporter for us this week.
Yes,
who went to a Nike event recently and only got to sit down with Eliud Kipchoge. And
the great Stoic of our time.
Well, this is what leads me in there. He's a man of great Stoicisms and comes up with these things. And there's a few. We've got 5 minutes of chat with him that you're about to hear right now. He talks a little bit about the marathon and how he thinks you should prepare for the marathon.
Brilliant.
I mean, if anyone's going to tell you how to prepare for a marathon, it's the GOAT.
Yeah,
right?
Come on, yeah.
So look, here, Ali Ball chatting to Eliud Kipchoge for 5 minutes about how you should run your marathon.
So, Eliud, the London Marathon is coming up next weekend and you're the ambassador for the mini marathon. How important do you think it is to get kids running?
To get actually kids running is crucial because kids are our generation, are our next generation. And, if we inspire kids to run every day a mile, that's a plus in class and in their health wise. And, in UK, daily mile actually has expressed a lot of positive impacts from actually 24,000 schools going to the tune of 8 million kids, which is actually impressive and positive number.
And if you were trying to convince a non-runner to start running, what would you say?
The non-runner start running is that the running is health. Running is, if you are not running, you are in prison. Running is where freedom is.
And how do you get in the right headspace for race day?
Towards the rest, I try to audit myself what I've been doing for my preparation period. And, that's what makes me to be calm and ready for the big day.
And you've achieved some amazing things in your career, but obviously none of that was easy. How do you cope when things get tough?
When things get tougher and tougher, I become calm and, it's good to be in a tough situation and provide solutions and shows that actually you are ready for change, you are a real human being. And, it's normal, that's how life is.
And are there any specific coping mechanisms you use during a race if you're finding things particularly difficult?
No, not at all. I don't have any mechanism or any formula to cope with it, but I just relax, keep calm, know what I've been doing for the last 3-4 months, and that's what makes me to be in the start line. When the can is off, just try to run as fast as possible and cross the finishing line.
What do you hope for the future of running, especially sort of given in the light of loss of such talent recently?
I think that the talent of running actually is promising in future. And I trust running will take over the world in future.
London Marathon next week. What's your advice to people running it?
My advice is that London is a good place to be. Big environment, streets will be full. Fans are crazy, they love sport. I want to tell them, let them actually go to the start line, start a race, finish the race, and enjoy actually the streets of London.
Thank you, Elliot.
Thank you.
Now, you know what? I never thought we'd get Elliot Kipchoge on this podcast, Ben, but we've done it.
We have done
it. And when I say we, I mean Ali.
Ali did it.
Ali did it.
I gave Ali a microphone. She did all the rest.
She made it happen in a day. We've been here for 4 years. So good for you, Ali. And yeah, well, that's lovely, isn't it? He is, you know, it's always a treat to hear Elliot speak.
If you're not running, you're in a prison. Running is freedom.
Yeah.
God, come on.
He needs to get a book out, doesn't he?
Several.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a coffee mug at least.
Yeah, that is.
So there you go. There's the great man himself chatting to you. And on to another great man when it comes to motivational things.
Well, thanks, Ben.
Oh, that's disappointing. Sorry, mate.
Oh, it's not me. No, it's actually it's our guest.
It's our guest of the week.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
Our guest this week is a sports science expert based out of Manchester Metropolitan University. He's conducted extensive research into the psychology of running. And we're delighted to have him on the podcast to look at how to conquer the marathon mind game. So, Dr. Martin Turner, welcome to Runners World Podcast.
Hello. Hi, both. Thanks for inviting me.
No, thank you for coming on. So, obviously, it's London Marathon this weekend, and lots of people will be wanting to do well.
And I think.
Hopefully, right?
Yeah.
And they might have heard about visualising success in the marathon. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of positive visualisation and why it might be something worth trying?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this is a really sort of, I would say it's a fundamental skill that athletes that I've worked with either arrive at it themselves, but they kind of naturally understand that, well, okay, there's this way that I can sort of mentally rehearse this thing before I actually do it. Or people get hold of literature, listen to podcasts like this. They kind of find this in the ether somewhere. It's a very popular thing that people talk about. And you can use it in loads and loads of different ways, but people tend to use it in a way that's, I would say, across three different things. So positive emotion, kind of self-confidence or mastery. So see yourself enjoying the race, see yourself being part of the community, running your race, getting things spot on. So that's that sort of positive visualization or positive imagery that you mentioned there, really. But probably a more important way to use it would be to see yourself coping with the difficult moments, especially in these kinds of events, which undoubtedly you're going to face some tough moments. So I think it's often used more effectively when you can actually kind of look towards the race and think, actually, yeah, there's going to be some difficult spots here. How am I going to cope? Can I see myself coming through these challenges and sticking to my race plan and actually coping through difficult times?
On the difficult moments, and I think maybe let's talk about the wall right now, because people will always reference hitting the wall, and that's always been determined to be quite a physical experience. It might be that your fueling has gone slightly awry, and you've run out of like glycogen in your muscles, but there is definitely a mental element to hitting a barrier at some point during a long run, and especially a race like a marathon. How much is the wall a physical thing? How much is it a mental thing? Can you sort of look to control as much as you can that suffering by, as we say, sort of visualizing success or other mental sort of cognitive processes?
Yeah, I mean, as you said there, really, it is largely considered to be kind of a physical phenomenon, isn't it? There are some ideas that the brain is involved in this. The central nervous system is trying to protect the body from damage, so thus creates the wall. So there is some psychology behind it. The idea is that you can kind of overcome it with significant effort and hardship, really.
Okay.
The wall is there for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of supposed to be there to protect you. You ran out of energy. But in terms of strategizing for if and when that happens, I think it's about facing reality, slowing down, finding time to refuel, reminding yourself of your race plan, getting back to what you can control, keeping it simple, one foot in front of the other. Sometimes it's breaking it down to its simplest form, it's telling yourself to move, telling yourself to keep going. I don't really think there's anything that you could do in that moment that just immediately gets through it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
you have it's to like, get through it. Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like there's no magic pill that can do that for you. So I think it's about slowing things down, facing reality. That's quite difficult, actually. It sounds simple, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite difficult because there is a psychological impact to hitting the wall as well. And you sometimes might not be able to think straight. You might not be able to think too clearly. So part of this is facing the reality that you might, that this might happen to you.
Yeah.
And instead of hoping that it doesn't, just thinking, well, that's not going to happen to me, and I'll just put it in the back of my mind. It's accepting that it might and thinking about, okay, if it does happen, when it does happen, what do I do in that moment?
Mm.
And visualizing that moment and thinking, okay, here's what I'm going to do. It can be part of your if-then strategy. If I hit the wall, then I will slow down, keep it simple, one foot in front of the other, find a way to refuel slowly, steadily, obviously not too much too soon.
Mm.
So it's not something to be feared necessarily, but it's something to be prepared for as a possibility, for sure.
Talking about sort of prepping yourself for something difficult, there's a running journalist called Matt Fitzgerald, and he wrote this book called How Bad Do You Want It? Which is a really good book with a really bad title. And one of the chapters he talks about bracing yourself. So he says a good strategy for like a tough challenge is to expect it to be hard, and ask yourself to be strong and to expect it to be really hard, rather than like, and I think we've all done the other way of like going, I hope I can maybe just get through this without it being that hard. Maybe it won't be hard. Yeah. Are you familiar with this mental sort of priming strategy? And do you think that's actually the way to do it, to brace yourself for a difficult challenge is better?
That makes sense to me. I mean, a lot of my work is based in ancient Stoicism, which I don't know if you guys have come across much.
Not really.
This is something that has become more popular probably over the last decade or so, but obviously ancient Stoicism, you know, 2,000 years ago really is when this stuff starts to emerge. Has become quite popular because it's a very sort of reality-based philosophy of, look, life is tough.
Hmm.
The idea is to prepare yourself for bad situations, and part of that might be to kind of brace yourself in that sense. They had this idea, this practice called premeditatio malorum, which is basically premeditating on bad things that might happen.
Right.
So it's all about expecting the best. So I'm going to prepare to put in the best possible performance. And I'm going to back myself to do it. So when I'm visualizing, I'm going to see myself enjoying the race, doing well, coming through difficult times, but at the same time preparing for the worst. And I don't think you can do that unless you take your mind into those worst moments to say, okay, well, this is going to be tough. There are going to be some dark times, some difficult moments. It's a tactical strategy. Mm. It helps you identify potential issues. You can plan for them. It can feed into your if-then planning. It reduces blind spots. So rather than wishing for life to be, as it should be, it's like, let's start face reality. This is going to be tough. So I better not kind of distract myself from that truth.
Mm, I love that. Yeah,
a lot. It's good, isn't it? It sort of sits in line with the idea of taking the pressure that everyone will feel, the nerves and the anticipation and the anxiety around that race, realizing that it will probably be that way and trying to turn it into a positive. Is that kind of, you can't flip it into a complete positive, but I guess the controlling the controllables make it more positive for you.
I'd agree with that. I don't think about things necessarily as negative or positive.
Mm.
It's more about, does it help you or does it hinder you to get to your goal? So you might have to come through some negative experiences, some negative thoughts, some negative feelings, but actually, largely, even if you experience something as negative, it is kind of designed to help you in a way.
Mm.
It's either there to protect you or to warn you. It's part of the brain's way of dealing with difficult situations. So it just is. There's no positive or negative about it, but you do get to make the decision as to, do I make this work for me or do I make this work against me? And that is a decision you can make in the moment. It's very difficult to make in the moment when you're exhausted, you're in pain, which is why you've got to do this beforehand. You've got to use this visualization for your training as well as your actual performance. This isn't something you pull out on race day. You've got to build this mental blueprint day after day after day. Mm. Use it in training. Spend 5 minutes a day, you know, maybe just before you go to sleep, building that mental blueprint of you doing well, racing well, facing difficulty, coming through it. This is something you've got to build over time.
A lot of people might be feeling quite a lot of pressure before a marathon, Martin. I guess it'd be thinking that, you know, maybe it's a time pressure or getting round. Lots of things can play on your mind. Is there a way of turning pressure into a more positive emotion, a way of kind of reframing some of those feelings into something that maybe serves you better as a runner?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things to understand about pressure and sometimes the anxiety that comes with it is it's sort of a natural thing, really. It's natural and normal, and it's there to help you. Now, probably not going to help you if you see it as something that isn't helpful.
Yeah.
So in some ways, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You've got to learn to see these emotions that you experience and to see that pressure as something that is there to actually kind of help you, give you the energy to succeed and try to channel that anxiety for good. But I think that's the positive spin. But I think a better way is to see it for what it is. This is a natural part of facing something that's quite important to me.
Yeah.
Now, that gives you some opportunities, because when you're facing that pressure, you are more switched on, you are more focused. Your mind and body does tend to orient itself towards performance versus going into something that you don't care about or isn't important. So you've got to try and channel that. And part of that channeling is backing yourself, focusing on your strengths. You guys mentioned it earlier, focusing not on what you can control. But also something that's underrated. Two things that are underrated. First one, being curious. How well can I race? What if I executed my plan perfectly? You know, I'm curious to see how I perform under this pressure. Mm. I'm interested to know what can my mind and body achieve when I face something really important. And I think the second thing is gratitude. What an amazing thing to be able to do. What a privilege it is to be racing today and to be at this event, no matter how big or small. So I think in trying to channel this pressure into something good, I think it's about coming back to those basics. Back yourself, be curious. I think gratitude is a really big part of dealing with pressure.
It's time for an advert.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And now back to the podcast. On the topic of hardship, and I think that this is probably like an infinite circle of once you sort of get through the hardship and you experience it, you've obviously pushed a mental parameter. And you're thus capable of doing a bit more. And so that hardship level shifts, but you have to do the hardship first to get there. Yeah. So if people are facing this race and they're very nervous and anxiety and they want to make running or marathons or whatever it is, something part of their daily life or their future plans,
yeah.
That hardship's sort of an essential part of it.
is really. And that's true in life.
Yeah.
Trying to achieve things. You know, as human beings, we're a mobile creature. And so we move. And the problem that has faced us in our evolution is where do we move to? What do we move towards? Yeah. And what do we move away from? So we naturally sort of are goal-directed. We naturally kind of set goals and figure out what that next thing is. And one of the common misconceptions about sport, even if it's a recreational level, is the idea that when I achieve my goal, I'll be completely 100% happy and content.
Yeah.
You know, I can move on and life's going to be perfect. But that's not what we're like. We hit that goal and we say, right, what's next? Look at the guy that's just ran across Africa.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He's like, well, it's bigger and better next.
Yeah.
You know, so you're never content, you're never satisfied. And what happens commonly is when you talk to athletes who've achieved something really, really big, it's not that they experience contentment or happiness. It's usually relief followed by anxiety of how do I repeat it?
Right.
So you're perpetually figuring out what the next goal is, facing that hardship that takes you onto that next goal. And when you achieve it, it makes it even more worth it. An easy goal, when it's achieved and experienced, it's superficial. It doesn't feel right in it. And it kind of feels superficial in the moment. You know, so it's good to come through that hardship and achieve something that you've been working towards.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I think you're right, yeah. It's kind of, nothing good comes easy, Ben.
I mean, this is it. Even the great Eliud Kipchoge is full of perhaps ancient stoicism, I think.
When
you hear him talk about his running and how he approaches these things, it's very matter of fact and very sort of, this will be hard, but you know, relax and you'll be all right.
Yeah.
Well, part of that is acceptance. You know, it's true, isn't it? That's the thing. I think sometimes we are tempted to tell ourselves the best story, you know, that makes us feel positive, and but actually, it's more important to tell yourself the true story.
Yeah.
Anything worth achieving is tough and difficult, whether that's physically, mentally, particularly distance sport, because of the sacrifices that we have to make to do it. Now, there's no getting around that you are having to dedicate significant time, energy, resource, not only time, but also financial resource, you know?
Mm.
You are sacrificing a lot to this thing, so you want it to be worth it. You know, you want it to be worth it, but that sacrifice is tough and difficult. So it's not just the pain you experience on race day or not achieving a goal and what you experience through failure, you know, for want of a better word. It's also that day-to-day sacrifice of missing family events, of not being able to attend that work function that you wanted to do, or missing somebody's birthday. Those are the things that get really tough over the long term for particularly distance athletes.
Hmm. Is there a mental strategy that differs between like your target? So if you're racing for time, or if you're racing to complete a race just in through effort alone, and that you're just happy with whatever time you get, you want to get to the finish line. Do you think that people have to prepare themselves differently for those different targets in terms of what's classed as, without, for want of a better word, as you say, failure and success?
Yeah. Oh, for sure, because one of them is a very finite, precise target, which you either hit or you don't, so it's binary. And the other is a broad, very open goal. Now, the evidence is actually pointing towards open goals being a bit better, actually. So I know I spoke about curious a little bit earlier. I'm curious to see how quickly I can finish this race.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
The people should consider a goal like, run the best time possible for me. If I really committed to my training, if I really executed my race plan, I wonder how quickly I could race. Rather than, here's this specific time, which runs you into this binary of I either do it or I don't. And let's face it, these things are difficult, so the chances of you not hitting it is quite high. You want it to be worth it, so you set difficult goals. So I'm trying to figure out how do I orient myself properly in this event, in this race. Again, I think it's being open and curious, and then what comes of it comes of it. My goal should be around things I can control. executing my strategy, having a good race plan, doing those things that I know to be good for my race. And let's see what the time is at the end. I can't control that piece ultimately, but I can control the processes that take me towards me running as quickly as I possibly can. You know?
Yeah.
And even if the goal is to finish the race, I just want to finish, there's still nothing wrong with saying, well, maybe I could try to see if quickly I could do this, you know.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's a completely different way of, like, I'm going for 3 hours 30, do you mean, as opposed to let's see what my body and mind can do on the day. I think that's actually quite refreshing.
Yeah, and I think you never know. You might exceed
exactly, yeah.
You know, you don't really know what your potential is, really, until you actually free yourself to fully express yourself on the day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think that...
Who knows?
Do you think that thought process has to come in really early doors then? So if that has to be the sort of mindset from day one of training almost. I know, because in training has to be very structured. Do you see what I mean? If you're going for a time, you'll have to look very... It's very prescribed. I have to do X number of miles at X pace to basically prepare myself physically to get to a standard that will achieve that.
Yeah.
So that mindset of being like, I'm curious and I want to experiment, that starts day one. Leading you up to race day, hopefully training or going to plan, that's where it comes in.
I think so. And I think, as I kind of mentioned around the visualization piece as well, this isn't just a race day thing.
Mm.
And none of this stuff is just race day. The reason I say that is because if you tell your brain, as if it's not part of it.
It's like you have a choice.
You know, but there are things that you can communicate to the brain. You know, you can think in certain ways and tell yourself certain things. If on race day you tell yourself all these special things that are completely different to every other time you've trained or raced, then you're constantly communicating to the brain that this is different and this is special. Now, the route to good performance is consistency. So why would you want to do something inconsistent on race day compared to what you normally do?
Yeah.
So whether it's focusing on open goals, being curious, you want to do that stuff throughout your training. So when you come to race day, you're just going with your instinct. You're going with the natural way that you approach this thing rather than something super special for race day.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes people believe that you've got to have this special race day routine. Don't do anything that's not repeatable. Don't do anything that you haven't already practiced. Mm. You wouldn't do that physically. So why would you do it mentally?
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a sort of mental equivalent of buying some new shoes at Expo and putting them on, I have done. do you think that mental strength is... I mean, it's interesting you talk about sort of stoicism. Say someone like myself wanted to become a stoic. Is it? Can you learn this stuff, Martin, or some people just... Is it more of a kind of innate thing that people... Some people just have mental strength and some people just have less of it?
Well, like anything, really, it's sort of nature and nurture. We're certainly more on the nurture side in terms of what you might call mental strength. You can for sure learn it just like you can learn a physical skill.
Mm.
There's no kind of weak or strong people in terms of their mentality. It's just that some of us are stronger in some areas and weaker in others. And for other people, it's different. So it's all a balance. So your psychology depends on many factors. You know, partly could be your background, could be your upbringing, could be your early experiences. You might have to work harder in some areas than others, and then they might have to work harder in other areas than you do, and that's fine. You know, you take the rough with the smooth, but it is learnable, it is buildable, just like a physical skill, and it's all about not finding the way; it's about finding your way. You know, so how do I want to think and feel on race day?
Yeah,
when you know, right at the start line, where do I want to be? And how do I get myself to that place? Now, like any journey, you've got to first decide what the destination is. So where do I want to be? How do I want to think? How do I want to feel? What do I want to be doing pre-race? Okay, I've decided that. Seems to be that when I'm feeling really good, really positive, really confident, that seems to be when I get the best out of myself. Okay, then the second job is, how do I get to that place consistently?
Yeah.
That's that day-to-day your mental rehearsal, the routines that you have in place, the goals that you set. That's when it starts to pay dividends. When you're at that start line thinking, actually, I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
You've learned how to get yourself to that place. So that's a learning process. That's you figuring out, well, this works, this doesn't work, and I tried this and it wasn't so great, so I tweaked it slightly and did that. But just like your physical training, mental training is the same. It's partly trial and error, partly about furnishing yourself with as much information as you could possibly get around good things to try mentally for your race.
Right, yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Is there anything, Martin, you think we've missed in terms of just...
I think that one of the things that is sometimes missed is because we spend a lot of time thinking and talking about preparing for the race, which makes sense because we've got goals and we want to understand how do I achieve my goals. But the other thing is kind of dealing, you know, what happens when you don't hit those goals? What happens when you come off the race and you think, oh, that's not gone well?
Yeah.
I think, you know, coping with failure, for want of a better word, coping with maybe not doing as well as you wanted to do. I think that's an important part as well. Because often people can fail and say, well, that's it. That's me done. I'm not doing this again. Too hard, too upsetting when things don't go well. You know, that's me done. And I think it's preparing for that as well. Preparing for things. Okay, I might come off the race a bit disappointed. Well, okay, it's not the end of the world. You know, the world's still going to be here. The relationships I have are still going to be there. It doesn't end me. It doesn't mean I'm a complete failure just because I might have failed.
Yeah.
It's part of the process. It's part of the development of me as a distance athlete. So I think it's trying not to apply too much additional weight and pressure to these things than it really deserves. I think that's important.
Yeah.
I think that post-race psychology is quite important for the next phase. On the day, the moment, what do you take away from the event? And then obviously your future running plans, you've kind of got a... And maybe this, Martin, goes into the visualization side of stuff. Like, obviously visualize yourself crossing the finish line in all your glory as you've sprinted the last 200 metres with finesse and you've, you know, set your PB and you're like... But would you encourage people to go into the dark, you know, of not making... like, maybe even DNFing or getting to the finish line broken and... behind schedule and all those sorts of things? Is that just as important?
Oh, definitely, because that's one of the potential outcomes and that's the reality of what you're getting involved in. So you'd want to know, how will I cope with that? Because that's going to happen from time to time. So I want to know how I kind of bounce forward from that as a human being. And I want to start to understand what's my process for dealing with that. Part of that is being balanced in your reflection, saying, well, okay, look, here's a couple of things that I could maybe work upon, but here's a couple of things that actually went quite well. You know, the whole race doesn't go down the pan just because it didn't end well. You know, you might have started really well, for example.
Yeah.
There might be aspects of the race that you think, I did execute that quite well, but yes, look, I might have made some errors, made some mistakes in the lead up or even during. So it's allowing yourself to have that balanced reflection, regardless of the outcome, whether you've set a PB, or you've not finished. There'll be things there that you can improve and there'll be things there you've actually done quite well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's having that balance, I think, is really important.
Martin, thanks so much for your time coming on the podcast and talking about some of the mental strategies runners can use to when it comes to the marathon. So we thank you very, very much for coming on and, hopefully get you back on at some point in the future.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, guys. Really enjoyed it.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Thanks very much for listening. And if you are running the London Marathon this weekend, very best of luck.
Yeah, very best of luck to you. Most likely I'll be at the sidelines and you will be too.
I hope so.
Giving people a shout, giving them a wave.
Yeah.
Please subscribe to Runner's World if you would like to. You can subscribe to the magazine. Just Google Runner's World UK and you'll head over to the Hearst Magazine's website and you find it. There's actually runnersworld.com/UK/podcast offer. Click on that link and you might find yourself a delightful offer of how to subscribe for cheap. That'd be good, wouldn't it? If you haven't subscribed to this podcast, do so already. Pass it on to your friends and family. Let them know about it, especially if they're running the marathon. It might be the thing, especially this episode, that just gets them over the finish line. A little bit of mental prep the day before might just help you. Thank you for listening, and you'll hear from us next week.